Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is our episode where we take audience questions, we talk about Jedi Temple Challenge and news. This week, we got big news, a big old batch of bad batch news, right, Ken?
Breaking news that actually was able to be slipped into our show notes before we record it. Shout out to those in the Discord server that posted and reacted to this news and then immediately asked, I wonder if it's going to be in this week's episode. It is.
Yeah, I was literally sitting with my show notes, making my little notes, and then I saw one tweet, and I was like, is this real? Is it happening? And the answer is yes.
I will make it real. It is what's going to be one of our big topics in a second here. But before we get to the news, we want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, or whatever new device they create next week.
your Lobot headgear.
I can't wait. I love that whatever Four Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But now it's time for some Star Wars or Life Adventures. Man, week went past, zipped past me real fast this week, Justin. So I don't know what I got. What did you have time for life?
Well, life made time for me, I guess, put it that way. Right. I did not have time to do a bunch of Star Wars stuff that was not related to getting ready for shows, which is great. Of course, we love doing Force Center. Force Center flows from our fandom. So I never want to make it sound like that isn't stuff I did for fandom. Here's the two Star Wars adventures I had this week, I'll say. I didn't have time to watch Solo on its premiere on Disney Plus, but I wanted to support it with numbers. So I set it playing in the background while I did some work on Friday. And then I kept turning around and getting distracted. I was at my desk working, but I can see my television from my desk, which is not ideal for being productive. I kept playing that game with myself of like, oh, I think around this much time has passed. Can I guess which scene we're on? And I got it right several times. But then I got caught up in the end. I watched the whole like last 20 minutes. I couldn't stop myself. I love that movie so much. So just partially watching Solo was a big Star Wars adventure. And then I will just say, this week I put together another episode that we just released on Sunday of Favorite Points of View, where I ask fans for their favorite thing in Star Wars and why. This is the second episode where we talked about inspiring moments in Star Wars. So I was putting that together, reading everybody's thoughts, reflecting on them. And this was a kind of a rough week for me. I got some things going on in my personal life, got some things going on in my career. Nothing, earth shattering or traumatic, but just a hard week where there's lots to cope with and lots of little moments where I could choose the light or I could choose the dark in terms of how I handle something. And going through everybody else's inspiring moments, and just thinking about Star Wars, thinking about, is this a moment where I want to take a deep breath and try to come up with a clever solution? Or is this a moment where I want to just lash out and rage? Mm-hmm. I had a good Star Wars adventure, and just like Star Wars and the community around it just really helped me cope and helped me take a deep breath and not lash out in anger. And thanks, Star Wars, I guess, is what I'd like to say. Thanks, Star Wars.
Yeah, that's great. That's why... When you come to Force Center and, hey, those folks over at Force Center, they're positive and everything. Yeah, what that means is we love digging in and being inspired by those who are inspired by Star Wars as well, and finding new ways to connect to these things and applying it to real life. All that's real, man. I was asked about it on a show Saturday night online. What does Star Wars mean to you? And it's like, it's something that, it's grown up with me, and I've grown up with it. It's evolved. And it goes from pew, pew, pew to let me think and ruminate on what that means to my life. And that's, I love when it rears its head like that.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's just, I had a fun time matching like, okay, I have a choice to make today in how I handle something upsetting. Is there any specific moment in Star Wars I can map that to?
You know, and you go to an index card. You and I have index cards on our desks that are just like, pull it out. Like a scene for this or that. Actually, it's not a bad idea.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yes. Emotional problems flashcards for Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah. And I should shout out real quick. Also, I was on the Going Rogue podcast. Andrew DiMolanta and his partner, Nikki, they had me on. And that was great fun. It was just a general Star Wars conversation. And I want to plug that episode of the podcast and the podcast in general. It was really fun. And that was just like, hey, let's have fun with Star Wars. What do you like? What do you not like? You know, that kind of stuff. Mm. It was a great conversation.
That's awesome, man. Awesome. Awesome. Good stuff.
How about you? What were your Star Wars adventures?
So Fast and Furious this week. Did not watch Fast and Furious. Didn't watch Solo. I'm planning on it. It's a Battlefront actually update. On Tuesday night, I streamed Battlefront as often. I try to do on Tuesday night, sit down with Battlefront on Twitch and just kind of play. Mark Riley, our pal Mark Riley's foraying into Twitch in the streaming world. So he finally got back to Battlefront 2. He had never played it other than the story mode.
Oh, wow.
And so we jumped in, find some technical issues. We finally, two old guys trying to figure out some new programs. We finally got in and we were playing together. And so he texted me, you know, it was fun session and everything. He texted me yesterday and he goes, I've been playing Battlefront 2 all week and I blame you and also praise you for getting me into this side of it. And, you know, it's sad that, you know, it's sad that Battlefront 2, the updates have ended, as we've talked about before here, but it's a reminder of going back to revisit things is important in Star Wars, because your relationship to it changes, especially when headlines, negative headlines, die down. And Riley is having fun. We're gonna even be, get this, Joseph, we're gonna play offline and not stream it. We're gonna just play for ourselves,
just for like fun as human beings.
Yes, we'll have to include you in our squad, sir. We can all just sit in our living rooms in our parts of the SoCal region here and play. And so that was kind of fun, you know.
Yeah.
The drawing power of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. That would be fascinating to play with people who were actually working together.
We did. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun doing that. You know, I'm disabling this. Guard me. And then he'd die and I'd die. But it was a lot of fun. We'd do it again.
But you tried to strategize, which in my experience when I was playing more of those cooperative modes, didn't happen much at all.
No. And then we you know, it's that co-op mode and, you know, you're playing against AI, but it's four people on a squad. I don't know what happened. Again, I play Battlefront 2. I'm not lost on some of the tech side of that, on how to set things up and everything, but what I don't know what happened. It was me and Mark in a squad with two complete strangers, and I was like, abort mission, we're out of here, I don't want to talk to anyone. Kind of weird. So there's that. Everything else was quick week for me, so didn't have a lot of time. I mentioned last week I've been rewatching Director and the Jedi, Last Jedi documentary on Disney Plus. I watched it on Disney Plus, got about 45 minutes into it, and talked about it on the podcast. And then that afternoon went back and it was gone. It's gone.
Poof. It's not on Disney Plus?
It's vanished, to the point where I was like, did I watch it on something else? Am I going? No, I went back. I was like, no, I was watching on Disney Plus. I mean, it poof, like Luke at the end of Last Jedi, just faded, gone. I can't find it. I don't know.
Metal hand with it, huh?
I'm going to have to pull out my actual physical media and watch it on there. I don't know.
Don't hurt your back opening that disc tray.
Oh, please. Trying to explain to my girlfriend why it's still valuable to have all those things. And this is the case in point. And then the final thing for me, I do the brick building every Sunday on my Twitch channel, and it's always Star Wars Lego sets. I have a couple of those I could build, but we're not. And so I built an older set. It's the older A-Wing from 2013. And it comes with generic A-Wing pilot. We all know it's Arvel Crynhead. And it has a multiple, you switch, you know, two faces on the Lego head. You can choose which face you want.
Oh,
and
it's wow. A
serious grimace and scared screaming face, which I thought was almost distasteful for Arvel Crynhead. Then it comes with Han Solo, and then it comes with Admiral Ackbar. So that's a weird thing. A-Wing with Ackbar and Han Solo. What is it? And I was like, yeah, all right, now look, Arvel Crynhead crashes into the Super Star Destroyer, Ackbar sighs, and Han finishes the mission down there on Endor. That all makes sense. But here's the best thing. I got a picture I'll tweet it out. Shout out to our listener, Kyle Harlow, who did a screenshot. Admiral Ackbar, you know, every Lego minifig comes with an accessory, Joseph. Han had his blaster. Arvel Crynhead had a wrench, apparently, fixing the A-Wing in space. Admiral Ackbar comes with a coffee mug.
Really?
Yes.
So he's just having his morning coffee while Arvel is making the ultimate sacrifice.
It was the best. I was laughing legitimately after like 5 minutes. Because you just put it, you're like, you know, you're going through your pile of Legos. You're like, oh, here's Han's blaster. What do we got? A little Lego coffee mug with Ackbar. And I just love there's some meeting of something like, what should we give Ackbar? A coffee mug.
I wonder if it is a super meta joke on the meta joke of coffees being advertised, like a Frappuccino is being advertised with pictures of Ackbar saying, it's a frap.
Yeah, and then world's number one admiral on the coffee mug. It should read. So anyway, small note, real fun, and just you know, adds to Ackbar's lore in my head.
That's right.
So those were my Star Wars life adventures. From there, it is time to go to the news. And breaking news on our recording day that we released this episode on Tuesday. We record on Monday, and literally as we are sitting down to record, like Joseph said, a tweet came across carrying this information, and the Bad Batch has become the Tortellis of Star Wars. We shall see what that does here. We got a spinoff. A spinoff indeed. Let me just kind of read the description here. Members of the Bad Batch, a unique squad of clones who are very genetically from the Brothers in the Clone Army, each possess a singular exceptional skill, which makes them extraordinary effective soldiers and a formidable crew. This we know from seeing them in Season 7. In the post-Clone War era, they will take on daring mercenary missions as they struggle to stay afloat and find new purpose. The big question, yep, Dave Filoni will be executive producer along with Athena Portillo, Brad Rao, Jennifer Corbett with Carrie Beck and Josh Rimes on board and co-executive producer and producer roles respectively. Rao is the supervising director and Jennifer Corbett will be the head writer. Everyone wants to know Filoni's level of involvement. We have no idea. We have no idea. And that's pretty much it, Joseph, in terms of the information. So let's dive in with thoughts and stuff on the Bad Batch spinoff.
Yeah, yeah. So just to address the stuff that you were talking about of the kind of who's mainly flying this ship, I think this is a similar setup to Resistance. Jennifer Corbett wrote a bunch of episodes of Resistance, so it would seem, and I believe Filoni was the executive producer, I really think that means super, super shaping it from a big, big, high above orbiting, like not down there in the trenches. And I think that is similar to Resistance. So I think right. Filoni is overseeing it, but I don't think he's going to be, you know, super directly involved. So that's my take, is that it is an evolution of, hey, we met some new talent on Resistance and we're elevating that new talent. And it will, if Jennifer Corbett's the head writer, I think it'll be Jennifer Corbett's show.
Totally agree with that. Totally agree with that, especially, you know, his involvement in other parts of Star Wars. Makes sense. And he tweeted out, did you see that tweet? You know, it slipped through my muted words there. He just tweeted out another picture of Ahsoka and said something about all the answers soon or some kind of very Dave-like tweet of getting people all riled up and excited. So,
he did not. That was a trick. That was a trap.
That was?
That's a parody account. That's meant to look exactly like him.
See?
I had to unlike a tweet. It was very distasteful. So yeah, I hit like on the tweet because I think that is coming eventually. The further adventures of Ahsoka in some way, even more than if she's just appearing in The Mandalorian. But then I was like, wait, I'm following Dave Filoni, and I'm not following this person. And it's like Dave underscore Filoni slash underscore.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's not a frap. It's a trap.
It's a trap. See, there you go. Fake news, kids. Onion is taken as real. I didn't even check. I just saw the retweets on it there. That is how misinformation happens, kids. Wear your masks. So, yeah, that's interesting. Okay, cool. I actually kind of like that because I was thinking that might have something to do with this. But it still might have something to do with this. It still might.
Yeah. I think your point that Filoni's a big picture day-to-day energy is elsewhere. I mean, we know that he is sitting there working on Mandalorian season 2 post-production and weighing in on that, right?
Right.
We heard rumblings. I can't remember what level of veracity, but I think they make a ton of sense that Filoni and Favreau are probably having a phone Zoom conversations about season 3. So, and I think there's some other animated series that Filoni is probably involved in, or who knows what other live action thing. So this makes perfect sense that he is executive producing and new voices will be, you know, running the ship.
Yeah. Athena Portillo worked on Clone Wars and you mentioned the Resistance connections, Jennifer Corbett. I'll go through a little bit later, just kind of connect the exact episodes she wrote. Cause you and I are going to probably look a little closer Resistance. After falling off mid-season 2, the final season, I picked up, and I thought that show just had some really powerful episodes into the home stretch. So it even gives me more faith in something like this. Going down to the nitty-gritty and what this could mean, Joseph, I'll start here. I love those Bad Batch episodes on season 7 of Clone Wars. I really did. Love them. They're kind of this, super team. And I think we were even joking. A lot of people were joking. Like, it feels like a show in and unto itself, right? So here we are. We got it. I am always excited for more Star Wars. This is not necessarily the show idea that I would have wanted, but this post Clone Wars era, that's intriguing to me. This like year or two after, and we could tie it to bigger themes and revelations, and that makes it intriguing to me.
Yeah, yeah, I think that that Bad Batch episodes were really great by themselves. They had all of this Star Wars depth of Rex feeling like the clone who had become maybe a little bit kind of rigid, and then he, I think, found some more like humanity and creativity from seeing these clones that had this perspective of humanity and creativity. So I think that those episodes absolutely had their place in just the story of Clone Wars, but they did also feel like a little bit of a backdoor pilot, and the Bad Batch does seem like they could be these sort of one note, you know, like what if the A-Team was kind of in Star Wars, you know,
right.
Very 80s, very one note, like here's their shtick, the same way, like there's so much that's 80s about it. They sort of remind me of He-Man, of like literally this character is named Moss Man because the action figure is going to smell like moss. That's his thing. You know, like there's so much about them that can seem one note. You and I have been making, and you included in our headline, you know, is this a spinoff like the Tortellis, which was that Cheers spinoff about Carla's ex-husband's family, which I think failed pretty quickly because they were a fun one note compliment to Cheers. But then they didn't evolve past one note. Or is this going to be Frasier? Are we going to take a character and develop a whole new world around that character and deepen it? And I'm going to make a bold Star Wars prediction, Ken. I think Bad Batch is going to be the Frasier of the Clone Wars.
Wow, tossed salad and scrambled eggs coming your way, everybody. And I have all the faith in the world that that is going to be true. But potential one note falls flat, but perhaps even more than that, Joseph, because this is so closely tied to the Clone Wars, this thing that's generally so well loved in Star Wars, that immediately sets up comparisons and expectations that could not let this show breathe. But it gets to be live on Disney Plus, which gives it some room, and I think it's going to work out okay. I'm coming from a point of positivity and faith in the process and the team and the names creating it. But you know what I mean? Where it's going to be like, well, this doesn't seem like the Clone Wars.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is probably going to strike out very quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if the first episode has a little bit of a tone or a style or even just thematic commentary of this is not the Clone Wars. I guess that I'll go out on a limb with that prediction. I think it's going to make it really, really clear that this is a story about soldiers who were made for war who suddenly don't have a war, and really, really make sure that that is clear right away, that that's what's different about this. And I do want to be super clear. I think that the Bad Batch did come off as pleasingly, not one note, but they were serving that function. You know, we were getting to know those characters and we're getting to have fun with them. But the story was a lot about Rex and his relationship with the clones and, you know, Echo and everything else going on. I think these characters have the potential to be really, really deep and interesting because in that arc, Wrecker is the funny one note. Oh, I wanted to smash. But it suddenly becomes a deep and interesting character when he has nothing to smash, or he has to smash for a different purpose, you know?
Yeah. New kind of smash. You're speaking the truth there. I think there's great potential. Again, on the surface, I see this, I go, okay, we got some G.I. Joe action figures in space, and that's going to be fun. But yeah, I trust the team, and I like what you're saying, Joseph, and the world they live in. I'm not automatically like got at my list of things I want to see or characters I want to see show up, but there's some fun crossover potential or fun cameos. And yeah, someone like Ahsoka, I guess, could show up. You know, it could be that, or it could be my want, my desire is every episode ends with them in Dexter's Diner having a bite to eat, talking about today's lessons.
Yeah.
I want that to be the Seinfeld location. I want this to be Seinfeld is what I want.
Frasier versus Seinfeld. It's the 90s again in Star Wars.
wings and we're good.
I think it's going to be a matter of, you know, especially since they say, you know, it's their mercenary adventures while they find new purpose. So I think it was really going to functionally be about, initially, they're going on adventures just to survive. If they, you know, they don't have any sort of infrastructure they live within. They might have kind of a weird place in the galaxy, being that they are kind of clones, but aren't immediately recognizable as clones. So I think it's going to be about, like, well, just what mission do we need to run to keep, you know, our ship fueled up? But then increasing tensions probably between the four of them of who do we want to be? Because we used to have these adventures for more purpose than just survive. And does one of them start to, one or two of them start to pull in one direction of, actually, I think that we need to go after this emerging empire, or, you know, others saying, no, we need to just settle down and hide. And I think that's where the show is going to get really meaty and interesting.
Yeah, I was going to kind of ask you about that, kind of, you know, as far as we know from this far out of the show, which is set to come out in 2021, no exact time yet. Yeah, is it another, you know, a rebellion cell, so to speak, whether or not it's officially that or not, or it's potentially in the early days, and like you just said, hey, we got to go hide, we got to survive, or we got to take them on. Is there an investigation side of it of, like, what the hell happened? Why did we, maybe not, our clone ships didn't work, or did it work? And when they killed a Jedi, I know they could get in some deep stuff like that. I guess I just don't want to set up my own expectations for that if it just turns out to be some rollicking, rolling fun.
Yeah.
Wonderful words today. You know, but again, it's Star Wars. It's going to have some depth to it. I expect that, but, you know, I don't want to take it too far down a path for myself.
Yeah, I think that's really good. We haven't heard an age range yet, and I did really enjoy Star Wars Resistance, and it did definitely have some themes and ideas, but there was a concentration on just, this is the fun adventure of the week, and it definitely did have, like, stakes and ideas, but it didn't, you know, roll around in them, as it were, you know, so I think that it is definitely a good idea to prepare for. Like, a lot of this is just going to be, they're on a different mission this week. For other characters popping up, I really wouldn't be surprised, and I would really hope for Boba Fett, because that is one of these stories of Clone Wars that didn't really get completed, is Boba Fett's full sort of turn from this young scoundrel learning the ways of bounty hunting to, I got the armor, here's my deal, here's how I became the most feared bounty hunter. And since he is also one of the other clones that's not really a clone, the same way these clones are, have this different relationship to being a clone, there's actual good, like, storytelling reasons that relate back to the main characters for Boba Fett to show up.
And then it all ties into Mandalorian season 2, right? Yes.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Confirmed.
Confirmed. Final note on this. What do you think, Justin? We've talked a lot about the potential of Disney Plus for Star Wars stories that are smaller, a little bit more off the beaten path, and we know Favreau's thoughts on, we're not Star Wars. This is, to me, a great example of something that I don't know if this would have existed without Disney Plus, but they have this playground to kind of construct their own slides and swings on. And I do, above all, whether I'm super excited for the show or not, I really like the use of Disney Plus and Star Wars in this way. I can get behind it.
Yeah, I love it, because it really does feel like just this spirit of exploration of, like, not everything needs to be, you know, totally planned to T, or not everything needs to be, this show is in support of this, you know, movie that's coming out, or, you know, supporting this marketing agenda. It feels like, hey, we have these characters that have been floating around for a long time. The whole world's finally going to see them. We love them. Why not? Let's have fun. And I'm sure anything that gets decided has, you know, some marketing behind it. But to your point, I think Disney Plus is just like, we want content that's fun, so fans keep feeling a desire to watch and desire to keep paying money and talking about it and convincing other people to watch. So it means that there can be just a little bit more, like, if you're just starting from, well, we need Star Wars content of any kind. What do you want to do? This would be fun. Cool. Let's experiment.
Let's do it. Let's get in there. And yes, this is our backdoor pilot for the Bad Batch report, coming, of course, at some point in 2021. Any other final thoughts on the Bad Batch, Joseph? Otherwise, we'll go on to our other headlines here.
Nope, that's all my batch thoughts.
Batch thoughts, you gotta have them. Hashtag batch thoughts. Headline reads, 40 years later, Empire Strikes Back, still got it. over this past weekend, part of this re-release of Empire Strikes Back that was pulled back in some areas, remained the same in some others. Empire Strikes Back put back in the theaters, and it had one more box office win. It's first since 1997, since the special editions. Finished the weekend with an estimated 400 to 500K. So the total for the film is now at 290 million plus domestically as it moves up the rankings. And, this is, we can make jokes, but, the Empire and Star Wars still has an appeal, and it's still great to experience it in the theater. I saw some people, one of our Discord folks, Tim Van Nuland, who tweeted out a picture or posted a picture on our Discord of him heading into the theater. Like, that's cool stuff, man. Cool stuff to see Empire and Star Wars still make some sort of headlines for this kind of stuff, Joseph.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the 290 million total, that's just fascinating. Because obviously, by so many metrics, Empire Strikes Back is a huge hit. But 290 million, The Force Awakens made 247 million in its domestic opening weekend. Just a little look at ticket prices, inflation, the changes of the world, you know.
My day, Junior Mints were a quarter. they were great.
Now so it's a quarter per Junior Mint.
not lying there. This lockdown quarantine situation, we talked about this before, Joseph, but it's pushed the idea of re-releases and bigger Jurassic Park and all these other ones are coming into theaters to get people to get back out, take a shot, be brave to go. I don't know. I'm still not ready, but you out there listening might be, and that's great if you feel safe. What do you think? Let's just re-release all nine films plus Rogue One and Solo. Put them in the theater, one a month for an entire year. Let's do it.
Yeah, why not? Why not? And I am not personally ready to be back in a theater. So I wouldn't. If they're going to keep doing this, you know, a lot of drive-ins are popping up. I would love a drive-in. You know,
yeah,
that'd be great. But once the lockdown ends, you know what I really want to see in terms of Star Wars releases in a theater? I would love some big special weekend. You know, I know you'd have to do maybe a couple of viewings, a couple of seatings. I would love for Mandalorian to be released in theaters because I would love the experience of seeing that with a group of people cheering and laughing. And I want to hear like an audience of several hundred people, the post-pandemic, several hundred people oohing and aahing at the child.
Yeah. At least if you do like, I don't know, episodes 7 and 8, I don't know, but those are short, right? So yeah, you can do 4. Yeah. Screw it. Do it all eight. Just one marathon viewing.
Exactly. Why not? You could do an intermission. That'd be fine.
Yeah. They do the 24 hours, marathons leading up to the movies. We can do it there. So we'll keep you updated when that finally happens. Leslie Headland spoke with EW. She, of course, will be running the as yet to be named Star Wars live action show on Disney Plus. At least another one coming. She, of course, has done a lot of things. I Sleep with Other People is a movie she wrote. I did not know she wrote that until I was reading the story this week. She's showrunner on Russian Doll, and she was speaking on EW's Untold Stories Pride Edition about Fran Lebowitz. So it's a much bigger show covering a lot of things, but naturally, anytime something is mentioned by Star Wars, it becomes a little headline. And she discussed running her upcoming Star Wars series. And she talked about the importance, kind of a surreal nature to it, and the honor of her being the showrunner as a gay woman and what that means. And she talked about the best way to get a seat at the table is when someone sends the elevator back down for you. I want to dive into those ideas, Joseph, because representation and diversity have been very much not just on the big national and worldwide discussion, but in Star Wars has had some great small victories and victories, especially on the publishing side. And then it's also had some big whiffs or perceived whiffs or just not enough action. So like a lot of things, it goes both ways. But this is a big moment and it's an important moment. And she realizes that. I loved hearing that from her.
Yeah, me too. I think it's great. I think that representation for me as an audience member, you can sometimes, I'll just speak for myself. Sometimes I just really enjoy seeing something that's coming from a different voice and a different perspective because there's just like a different energy to to the film or the story because it is coming from a different perspective. So I'm just really excited for somebody with different life experiences to truly be at the helm of a Star Wars project. And it's obviously people have been listening to you and I talk about all the different Star Wars we love. That's been made by a lot of the people that you would come to expect. And it's not like I don't think straight white men can create good Star Wars, but I'm still very excited for somebody with a different perspective to bring that perspective to Star Wars. And I'm a huge fan of Russian Doll, and all of those sensibilities are really fascinating when you start to combine them with Star Wars. So I'm super excited about it from that perspective. And then just reading the highlights of this interview, I love this quote about the best way to get a seat at the table is when someone sends the elevator back down for you. She also talks about how much luck is involved in this industry. And I just, that makes me super excited because I always want to hopefully like the people who are creating Star Wars. And I think when somebody in this industry says, hey, I believe in myself, I have a vision, I am talented, I am confident, but I also acknowledge that I am one with the cosmos, and luck is a part of the reason that I am at the table now, so I can express that talent that I believe I have. When somebody has the combination of confidence and humility that luck is a part of it, I'm just always more excited to see their work rather than somebody who's just like, I am brilliant, and so the entire world bent to my will. So just that perspective, totally my opinion, makes me even more excited to see somebody's work.
Nah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's something, there's something just charismatic in its own way about someone that gets, it's not self-loathing, it's not self, it's a little self-deprecating, but it's a reality. It shows that she has this full view of how she's here, why she's here, and why it's important, but also like you said, the luck. We've been at it for a long time in this town, and luck is a part of it. And that's not a bad thing too, by the way. It's not a bad thing. What I like too here is this is a Star Wars fan, and there's these bigger important things attached around her being in this position. But at the end of the day, it's a Star Wars fan with a different perspective. And that means she's going to look at Han a little different, Leia a little different, Luke a little different. And that, going to what you said, Joseph, is exciting. That it just is. We love these. Like, all right, so I looked at Empire this way, and you were over there in another time, and another state, or another country, with a different upbringing, a different perspective. And what do you think about that there? And you start bringing that all in, and it is going to make a more exciting, more robust Star Wars show. I love that idea.
Yeah. And that really excites me when it gets to wondering what this is going to be about, of like what, like literally, you know, when is it set? Who does it involve? It sounds like it's going to be in starring women. It sounds like it is going to be not super connected to things we've known before. But I think what it is connected to is, you know, looks like from old Wikipedia and Wikipedia that she's about 40 years old, which means I would guess that she grew up on, you know, repeated viewings of VHS tapes of original trilogy, and then, you know, was formative, young adult when the prequels came out. So maybe big expanded universe book fan, but I'm so excited to hear about what excited her in Star Wars, because that's probably what we're going to see on screen.
Yeah, that's again, this wasn't a straight up Star Wars interview, but when those things start, when she starts talking really about what personally brought her to Star Wars as a kid, you're right, Joseph, that's going to give us a real indication of what's to come.
Yeah, and I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We have almost no idea what the series will be, but I think you kind of answered what we hope it could be. And, you know, this not connected, it's all Star Wars, so it's connected one way or another, but not being directly under an umbrella of prequel era or original trilogy era, but it's kind of its own. That'll help it as well. And again, something cool coming to Disney Plus. I literally could have a new Star Wars show every month and be just thrilled and excited. So, final story. We got a first look at Thrawn Ascendancy. This is Timothy Zahn's Thrawn trilogy, the new one coming out. This is a prologue that was released. There's an audio version as well. StarWars.com has it up there. Joseph and I both read it. I listened to it for a point and then forgot it was on. But let's dive in. Joseph, that might be a little indication of what I reacted to in this. I'm apologizing to Thrawn fans. Let's discuss, Joseph. What did you think?
Yeah. Well, I think we're just in this fascinating time with Star Wars where, in terms of all of the content that's coming, there are all of these different frontiers being explored, and how much they're connected or not connected to existing stuff we know is a conversation that we're going to keep having. And it feels like what this is, you know, there's a ton of fans for Zahn's great writing. He has such a legacy in Star Wars. There's such a love of the character Thrawn. And it feels like they've given him some room where he can just kind of go crazy doing his Zahn Thrawn thing. And it's probably not going to touch a lot of other Star Wars. And for me, the part of that I'm excited by is I've come to really enjoy Thrawn himself is just Sherlock Holmes in space, and put away some of my expectations that it might connect more. You know, I really loved Thrawn Alliances. We got all this juicy Anakin, Vader, Padme stuff, and a lot of connection to Rebels and the other books in the last Thrawn trilogy. But I feel like this one is mostly going to be the sort of joy and fun of Thrawn outsmarting people, and you know, maybe a little bit of Thrawn Begins, right? Of exactly, you know, how clever is he when we meet him as a cadet, and you know, what is this going to be like? He learns some powerful lessons in this first book that he then has these skills, all that kind of stuff. I've got a couple hopes of little bits of lore, Star Wars lore, that would excite me that this could maybe touch. But I'll save that for because I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, yeah, yeah. So this is definitely going to be. I love your take on Sherlock Holmes because we towards the end of the excerpt here in the prologue, we got preparing to transport for myself and senior captain Mithran Urudo. I cannot say it like Anakin. Destination Dioa. Purpose investigation of a derelict ship found 2 days ago in the outer system. We've got an investigation coming. So yes, I really do enjoy Thrawn as a character. I did enjoy Thrawn Alliances, but I have to admit that I was more him interacting with Vader, Anakin, some of the stuff with Padme, you know, that's and the tie into the Order 66 and the big reveal at the end there stuff. So I like it. I love Heir to the Empire as a series, the three books there that really relit the fires for Star Wars, and I have them on my shelf right now. But yeah, over the years they don't hold up for me as much. So I'm going to admit, Joseph, at the risk of getting angry tweets, that I'm not super excited for the series. However, reading this prologue, it does take you into you're learning more about this culture and this world and the ruling parties and how it functions. And that's kind of interesting in its own right as you expand the galaxy in this modern era. I'll make a weird connection to, I don't know, the Game of Thrones world of ice and fire kind of thing where you're learning about how they function out there in Essos and that culture worked. And now this family came to be and this house grew to power. So I am intrigued with that stuff. And you know, there's going to be some kind of connection, big or small, that will probably be pretty cool. That might have that moment of like, oh, wow, they did that. They opened up a gift shop on Exegol. I like it.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that I'm most excited for. Like that excerpt was perfectly great writing, as Zahn always is for my taste. But it is like, okay, well, I'm going to have to invest in order to get engaged, I'm going to have to invest in who all these families are. What is their philosophy? How does it fit into the history of the Chiss ascendancy and all of that? And that can be work compared to sit down and get Padme's insights during Phantom Menace, because you're already invested in that. Right. So it does, for me as a reader, go like, okay, I got to get invested in this family. Or all these family dynamics and political dynamics, the stuff that it might touch on. I like that they refer to, you know, somewhere in that that passage about somebody was out in the chaos. And they've had a couple different mentions across Star Wars lore and canon about how nasty the unknown regions are and how many weird mysteries are out there that can ravage people. That excites me. I want to see some of those weird mysteries up close. I would love some sort of passing reference or to Octo or Exegol. I like the way that in the other Thrawn trilogy it was developed that the Force-sensitive chists lost any connection to the Force once they got a little bit older. That's such a great idea of how the chists are so logical that they sort of drive people's intuitive connection to the Force away at a certain age. And I would love more on that kind of stuff, other views of the Force. So I've got my fingers crossed for Sherlock Holmes in space, a little bit of Game of Thrones family, and a little bit of touching on weird unknown regions Force lore.
Sounds good to me. You've won me over. I mean, I was going to read it anyways. Come on. You know that there. That is it with the news. We're going to take a quick break in a second. But before we do, we want to remind you of an audiobook that we want you to try out. Joseph, what is our Force Center recommends?
We are going to recommend Alphabet Squadron : Shadowfall by Alexander Freed. We're going to be cracking that book open, reading it, and we'll be reviewing it next week on our Thursday show, on our deep dive show. So if you want to follow along for our big spoiler-filled review, be sure to check out Alphabet Squadron :
Do it now. Do it. And to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. Quick break on the other side. We're going to look at Jedi Temple Challenge Episode 6, and we've got some great questions from all of you out there in Force Center Land. We'll see you in a bit.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Hey, 4Center fans, don't forget 4Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4Center on YouTube. Check it out. To 4Center, the news edition, and on the news edition, we also take your cues, and we look at Jedi Temple Challenge. Joseph, it's been, again, a lot of fun to have this show in our lives as Star Wars fans, and it inspires my inner 12-year-old every week.
Oh, yeah. I sat and watched it this morning. I didn't stay up late with whiskey. I watched it in the morning like a regular person with coffee, and it reminded me of watching game shows in the summer when I was a kid.
Exactly. Just before four episodes of Gilligan's Island would come on in syndication. Yeah, good memories. Let's dive into the sixth episode this week. Here's the teams, Max and Ziggy, which that's a great band. They're the blue team. Anna and John, the purple team. Sarah and Juliana, the orange team. We got some highlights to discuss here, Joseph. I want to talk about the Team Blue's motto. Hope for the best, expect the worst. What do you think about that in terms of this game, but also life?
I have said that to myself many, many times. I think it should be a part of my personal Jedi code. I love it. I think it's extremely healthy.
I think it's good. Some friends of mine have their writing team put together for years and content producing partners, and they always just have a thing of what's the worst that can happen, right? You measured up against that and you're okay. So I liked this motto here.
Right. You got optimism, but you're also aware that the walls are going to come crashing down upon you.
And you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
That's an important part of it. Yes.
So I want to shout out. You have to talk about it, and we talk about it carefully. I want to shout out Juliana and her struggles. She, Joseph, had a problem on the swing. She had a problem jumping. And Juliana, I don't assume you're listening, but I want you to know, I've been there.
Oh, yeah.
I have been there, struggling to do a pull-up, struggling to climb up a rope, or just struggling to do something that seems so easy to everyone else, but you just can't seem to get it. And I could tell, you could tell in her body language, she was disappointed in herself. I just, you know what? Like Giovanni last week, kind of pulling his pants up and struggling through himself. We are that, and I've been there, and I found great inspiration in her getting back up on that rope every time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it felt to me like that kind of thing of just needing to figure out, like, for your own body, what is the energy? Where do I put the center of my energy, and how do I do it? And I related to that so much because I would have, as a kid, one or two things that came to me naturally physically, but almost the entire physical world was just, how do I do that? I got in big trouble in kindergarten because we were having a gym exercise. We were supposed to bounce a ball on the floor, off the wall, and back to us. And I could not do it. And the teacher got so mad. It's a whole thing. Grabbed me. There were claw marks. It was awful. So I relate.
No, look, in my mid to early 20s, when I was over doing sketches and stuff over the Groundlings Training Center and all that junk and doing a show there, I had a sketch where me and two other comics, Peter Spride and Brian Keith Etheridge, we had to hang from a metal bar on stage, and it was supposed to be a helicopter rung, like we were hanging for our lives, right?
Yeah.
And it was a runner during the show. So, meaning if one of us fell in the first bit, we had to then drop. We couldn't do the next two sketches, which were in one show. It was this runner. And I lift weights, do all that stuff. I'm a heavy, bulky guy. I don't have the arm strength. And I was like Giuliano on that swing. And I stayed on with all my life. But it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing to watch people go like, this guy can't hang on that bar for 30 seconds. What's wrong with him? And I had to go back out each time and clearly just kind of suffer through it. And I never fell. I never fell, Giuliana. And I've been there, and I was really inspired by her.
I understand. Because as a scrawny guy, hanging from things is where I was a Viking. I could do that. But
see,
because I had no body mass.
My friend Peter Spright, who I don't know if you've ever met Peter, you two are very similar in look, build, and comedy stylings. Like, like doppelganger, like you would love Peter. And he would hang there with one hand, almost taunting me. He's not. He was a nice guy. But it was just like, and I was like, I can't do it. So I get it. And you know what? Sarah Giuliana lost, eliminated early first round, but they said in their post-game little comments, they won a stronger friendship. And Joseph, I think that's the big victory today.
That is really the big victory. Strength, knowledge, bravery, friendship. I think friendship should be listed.
We absolutely. We go on to the second round of the story. We always love pulling some stuff for the stories. I got to ask you here, what do you think embarrassing meditation recordings are?
I ramble about tip of the iceberg storytelling. I think this was great. This is great to have a story about a Padawan who dropped a holo recorder that had embarrassing meditation recordings on it. And I think it did invite you to just guess. I think it's going to be failed meditations where he can't concentrate and just starts hyperventilating and saying swear words.
Yeah, that's the one. And the fact that he and the space ape end up watching them together later on shows me, all right, there's some great value and learning from your embarrassments, I guess. Yeah, I thought that was fun. Those stories are fun, full of a lot of little details. In the final round, John and Anna, they got there and they went straight to the dark side. And I love how they played with this, Joseph. They had to do some reshoots. That's right, some Star Wars Jedi Temple reshoots, because they set it up with Keller and Beck kind of feeling the dark side of the Force working its magic. I really love the way they did that.
Yeah, because they didn't try at all. They just ran in and hit it. Like, no, we knew we were going to go to the dark side. It's clearly the better tactic. What's the problem?
Yeah. What do you got there? Very, very fascinating there. And they win. So I guess going to the dark side, you know, we could talk about our deep lessons and the values and this in the morals. And they won. It worked out.
They won this time.
This time. There you go.
Yeah, but that dynamic was really fun because I think they were either older or a little taller than a lot of the other contestants.
Yes.
And they definitely had a different vibe, and it seemed like it's so weird to just have opinions about kids, but that's right. What we're doing here. It seemed like John was very focused, very smart, very skillful, but not always the best listener. Like there's that, it cracked me up. His partner was Anna, right? And when he's swung across the chasm there, he just let go of the rope. And she's like, John, the rope.
Yeah.
And then he's not doing the best listening when they're putting together that little tower in the dark. And then at the very end of the thing, when they have their post interview after becoming Jedi Knights, they're talking about all the things that they did together. And Anna adds right at the end, and teamwork. We learned teamwork, right?
Yeah. I hope there's a tournament of champions and they bring back winning teams, Jedi.
Yeah.
Bigger battles. It'd be fun.
A big part of the charm of this show is just seeing all those different dynamics between young people becoming adults.
That's right. It is truly the lessons of Star Wars. Couple of thoughts here in the segment here, Joseph. I got to ask, if they were to sell these outfits at Galaxy's Edge, you go to Duck Ondor's and you Duck Ondor's and you got the Jedi Temple Challenge Jedi outfits. Which one are you going with? What's your color here?
Oh, I like the blue. I like the blue. And I was, in fact, admiring them. I like the, they kind of got the little, the blaster, the slung low on the hip and the little bracer things on the arms. I love them.
I'm going with purple. I think blue would be the second for me. I just don't look good in orange. I just don't, but I wear a lot of purple. So I think I go to that too. And you know, this is probably, I'm joking, but this could be a realistic thing down the line. Jedi Temple outfits. We still want to get that Sith robe that they got there at Doc Ondar. So.
Oh, very expensive though, right?
Very, very expensive. The cost of that Jedi robe is like turning to the dark side. It's a lot out of you. It's going to maybe not be the best. Final thought here. We've been joined. You and I even talking off air, but I'm at best as Kelleran Beck. Mary Holland is 83. Great interplay. Great moments there. I just love the wrestling rancor. Ever wrestled the rancor 83? And says it again. Have you ever wrestled the rancor? I just love what's going on here.
Yeah, this one might be, I know we've said it many times, but this week might have been my favorite for banter. I liked the through line about what organic body parts 83 does have and doesn't. And then Keller and Beck follows up of like, you know, you don't have teeth. Not that you know of. That was a great zinger. Good job.
Great zinger. Yeah, Mary Holland. I like her style of humor. She plays with the downbeats. I love it. I don't know. So it's been fun. And I want more of the Kelleran Beck story here. I don't know how, a comic book, a show. I don't know. I want more. And it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love Jedi Temple story time where it's a bunch of the Padawans, and what they've actually won is story time from Kelleran Beck.
Love that. So that's episode 6 of Jedi Temple Challenge. 4 more. We'll stay with it here to the end of season 1. Look for it on Star Wars Kids. All right, Joseph, we got audience questions.
That's right. We take these every week. We get them from social media and from our patrons on Patreon. This week, we have a mix of fun and deep, which is perfect for Star Wars. We're going first to Twitter, and we got this question from Ryan Dino 101. A solid Twitter handle right there. Ryan Dino 101 asks, what are your thoughts and interpretation of the Mortis arc in the Clone Wars? And let's frame this a little bit. We can and eventually will do a 3-hour episode on all the thoughts and interpretations of the Mortis arc. But I thought maybe we could both just kind of do a little bit of an overview and any sort of bullet points of Mortis that we churn around in our minds a lot. So for you, what's your overall relationship to the Mortis arc?
I love it, and I'm mesmerized by it, and I watch it. I'll tell you what, I've watched it more than a few times because I kind of think to myself, wait a minute, what happened? I got to go back. I want to revisit it. What did I miss? And there's a lot of juicy stuff there, and I think a lot of it has to do with Anakin, the vision of what he's going to become, some confirmation on him as the Chosen One, all those kind of things. But I'll just say I've been mesmerized from the first moment I saw it because it's not something that I gravitate to right away with Star Wars stuff. You know, I like my fighting, I like my spaceships, and I want to go that direction. But to go to this mystical, magical realm and to see that this is really something George wanted, I just have never been able to turn away from it, which to me speaks to its power and perhaps its purpose, even if I don't always grasp every little detail of it. And then I love going back and digging in. And then even just when it starts to pop up in some way in Rebels, you know, just imagery or connections, it got me excited. So the episodes have always worked for me.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think there is something very dreamlike about them because I have watched it many times and I remember the events and I remember the moments that really resonate with me. But there's something dreamlike about it where sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, what are all the beats? Because I think I just get sort of lulled into it in a certain way, which I think is, you know, really powerful. I also think having heard Filoni talk a little bit more, I think at least for Filoni's influence in this kind of deep force lore, and I think this matches up with Rebels, I think there's a real desire to have some things be very clear where you can trace that back to other Star Wars lore. And I think there's an effort to have some things left up for interpretation, because I think it seems to be important for Filoni of like, yeah, you could probably glean this meaning, but you could maybe look at it this way too, which I think is really great because it reflects Jedi philosophy of, you know, there are no absolutes. That's the absolute, is that there are no absolutes, that you try to look at things from lots of different ways and many different things might be going on. And I think while Mortis does have some concrete things, I think it's also embracing that philosophy.
In other words, there's a lot there, Joseph, and perhaps we should dig into it further on an episode of the Clone Wars Report.
Yeah. The concrete thing I want to say, definitely excited about Clone Wars Report. The thing that I've got the most out of it, watching it the last couple times, is this picture of if Mortis exists as sort of one of the guardian places to help keep the overall flow of the Force in balance. It's this cosmic place, as well as a physical place, that darkness is there in the form of the sun and light in the daughter. And it only really goes out of balance when the sun wants more, and how much that is, to me, that's one of the concrete themes. That is the story of the dark side. The Force goes out of balance when the dark side wants more.
I like it.
Yeah, takes action. Any other thoughts? Any other little specific thoughts? Parts that you love? Interpretations that you cling to?
I do love all the stuff with Anakin's vision. I don't know why I get really excited when I see things I know in an animated form. That's a thing I saw. I like it. I like the visual, I like the imagery of it, and I am always touched and moved by some of the big deaths in that series.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's definitely some great. Oh, it's Qui-Gon. Oh, it's the son pretends to be Shmi, and like it's some big, like, wow, these are important. The actual vision of the future that Anakin has is terrifying and cool, because we're like, yeah, that's what's gonna happen. But I think it also has this weight for me to see that moment where Anakin sees that vision of the future and doesn't want it. And yet we're also within this arc seeing him makes the kind of choices that are going to lead him that way, where he is, you know, very stubborn and very afraid of loss. Everything that's going to move him towards that vision coming true. But at the same time, you're seeing in his heart of hearts, he doesn't want that vision to be true. And it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah. Tragic. Totally tragic.
Total tragic. Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically just is a great question. So I didn't want to ignore it from Rhino Dino 101. But basically, that's our teaser for we'll be doing some more coverage of the Clone Wars, and we will get to the Mortis arc, and it will be juicy, right?
Oh, so juicy is going to drip down your quarantine beard, everybody.
That might be one of the funniest and grossest things that has been said on the Force Center podcast feed. Too real, Ken. Too real. We're going to move on to a question that came from Twitter from Amidala's Chef, another great Twitter handle. And yeah. Amidala asks, which Star Wars character will you go have lunch with at Dex's Diner? Yeah, that's it's also juicy for the old quarantine beard.
Yeah.
So do you have a thought of we've got this kind of question, which Star Wars character would you meet, hang out with, live with, be quarantined with? But this is specific. You're going to Dex's Diner to dine. Who with, Ken?
Well, so I love in the real world, I love diners. That's a weird obsession. I love average to low average diners. And I think Dex is above average. I love the sequence. I love this character. But I'm answering, honestly, if I'm in this world, Joseph, I'm going to eat there by myself most of the time. I'm a big lunch by himself guy and have been for years. So that might be the first answer. But going to a diner, I want to go with someone who either appreciates diners or knows the diner maybe more than I do. So it's hard not to say Obi-Wan is the answer. He's going to be like, oh, yeah, don't worry. WA7's got you covered. Like, just ask for this. It's off the menu. That kind of thing. And then that said, I got it. I'll tell you, who knows if he eats whole frogs now as an adult, but I'll go with Yoda too, because Yoda's got kind of the old man in the corner at the diner vibe.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's got the stories and wants to impart the wisdom, right? Yeah.
And he just kind of sits there reading the newspaper in 2020 at a diner. at 2 a.m. when no one talks to him. So I'll go with him and probably have a pleasant conversation over some hash browns and eggs.
Some Ronto eggs. Do Rontos make eggs? Sure. Man, I'm just enjoying this whole fanfic now that is materialized in my head, where you would walk in and WA7 would be like, "You want the solo booth, honey?"
Yeah. At the counter, you know,
put you in the booth for one, or maybe the weird side seat on the counter, and it would get packed, or maybe you'd sigh. Yeah, that's what happened. You'd be eating and you would sigh because you're just thinking, and you wouldn't even know that you sighed out loud, but right. Yoda would hear, and he would walk over with his cane, and he would bend your ear to try to make you feel better.
"Is empty this seat is?"
Yeah.
Just slide in. Yep. Yep.
Eggs avoid. Yeah, great stuff.
Who would you take?
Oh man, I couldn't resist Obi-Wan, because if I could meet any Star Wars character, it would be Obi-Wan. He's so full of contradictions. You know, this scene I love because I think it shows as part of Obi-Wan that he likes engaging with people. I think he likes hanging out at bars and diners and chatting with people. So I think he'd be up for it, you know, to have a random conversation. But then I was like, you know what would make it different? What would make it really, really special is to go to Dex's Diner with Obi-Wan and Duchess Satine. Because they've got some of the great banter that there is in Star Wars, of all of her questioning of the Jedi choices and the collection of half-truths and hyperboles known as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I wouldn't want to do it every day, but I'm sure we've all been there. I've hung out with some friends who are a couple, and every once in a while they're like, "Wow, I'm here while there's some stuff going on between you, you two." And, you know, I don't want it all the time, but every once in a while it's kind of fun and interesting. And so I would like to have a nice brunch with them, maybe some nice space mimosas while they're working through some stuff.
I'm on board for that. Wow. That is the Obi-Wan and Satine novel that we want. We've always talked about wanting, but that's specifically what we want.
That's right. Brunch of Destiny with Obi-Wan and Satine.
Love it.
Great question, Amidala's chef. We are going to move on to our questions from Patreon. We have a similar but very different question from Will Culbertson. Will asks, if you could choose any Star Wars actor to sit down and watch a Star Wars movie with, who would it be and which movie? So not Star Wars character, Star Wars actor, and a specific movie. Ken, do you have thoughts, desires, dreams, fears?
All of the above. I've got three choices, all right?
Oh, damn.
Well, Will said any. I'm going to cheat, okay? Feel free to, while I'm blabbing, you pick some backups, Joseph, all right? I'm going to go first, no order, but Jonas Suadamo, Solo, right? Eunice or Jonas, I always forget. Him sitting down with that, because he had that great tweet over this past week of just like, look, I know there's a lot of conversations and debate around these movies. That's part of it. But I just enjoyed making these two movies and showing Last Jedi and I think Rise of Skywalker, right? And I just, you know, his joy, he's an ambassador for this stuff. He gets really involved. He's interested in the Make Solo 2 stuff. And I just think he has a great joy and spirit to him. And I missed out on meeting. He had come to Collider, the offices, to do an interview, and I wasn't there full time anymore. So I missed out. I just, you know, he just seems, I just, type of person I just want to meet and say, hey, thanks for being a great ambassador for this thing I love so much. I think I'd sit down there. Runner up there, if he wasn't available, Ahmed Best in The Phantom Menace. Could you just imagine his takes off camera? No stream, no YouTube watch along, just sitting down, some food and a drink, and watching The Phantom Menace with Ahmed Best. I would love that.
That would be a joy.
Right? My final one, my desire, like you said, to go to heaven, where Carrie Fisher is waiting in the Heaven Hilton bar and watch any Star Wars movie with her. Maybe even Rise of Skywalker. Just to be that's what they did with me. I don't know. I don't look good in that one. Maybe they can find I think that'd be fun too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. She would have some great zingers, I'm sure, about like, oh, that take, you used that take, huh? I know I did a better take than
that.
Not that her takes in Rise of Skywalker aren't great, but yes. Carrie Fisher is known to have a sense of humor and a sense of self-deprecating humor. Man, those are a lot of great choices. I was lucky to have an interaction with Yunus Suadamo in a bathroom at Dragon Con, I think I told you about, where I was just like, you know what? Now it's my chance. And he was being very friendly. So to everyone around. So I was just like, hey, you did a real good job. I think I said in Star Wars to make it clear I wasn't talking about whatever had happened in the bathroom. And he's like, well, thank you. You have a good day. It was great. It was absolutely great. He is so friendly and such a great ambassador. So he is a great choice. Ian McDiarmid would be pretty fascinating for my runner up. I would maybe watch Revenge of the Sith with Ian McDiarmid or Rise of Skywalker, because he's got such a great wit to him, and he's such a just sort of a grand old man of the theater that I think he's got different insights on, like, the themes, and then like fun little gently poking side comments, you know, so that would be great. But my number one is the same as your number one. If it's anybody, it's got to be Carrie Fisher. And the movie I would want to watch with Carrie Fisher is The Phantom Menace, because I think she'd have good insights on the actual movie, in the themes and the ideas, because she has, you know, such opinions about how Star Wars is about family, and I think that she'd have great insights about that, a great sense of humor about it. But then, of course, we know from various reports that she did some punch-up on Phantom Menace.
Right.
And I would love to see have her lean over and whisper and went, yeah, I did that one. Yeah. The negotiations were short. Yeah, that was me. There's always a bigger fish. Yeah, that was me.
It was me.
Yeah.
I would love that. Let's do it. Let's meet her at the Heaven Bar.
All right. We got a lot of places to be, Ken. We got to be the Heaven Hilton Bar, Dex's Diner.
Yeah.
The Star Wars bathroom where Yunus Suadamo lives. Joking. Okay, we are going to move on to our final question. It is a meatier one. This comes from Jeremy Klein, one of our patrons. And Jeremy says, we've heard Rian Johnson say that he believes that Luke's actions in Episode 8 align with his characterization in the original trilogy. How do you guys think his actions align? Or if you disagree, why do you disagree? Jeremy, great topic, and also very well stated for an essay format. I think that you and I both agree that Luke's actions align with his characterization in the original trilogy. Am I wrong there, Ken?
No, I agree, and also think that it shows an extension or a growth or a response to what that character was at that time, too.
Yeah. I definitely agree. Do you have thoughts that you want to share, or do you want me to dive in and go first on this one?
I'll list some bullet points and then defer to counsel here. I think the end result is probably the most in line with the ideas of putting down your weapon to win. I think Last Jedi lines up also with the lessons of sacrifice he's experienced with his father, Obi-Wan. We know now stuff in, you know, the Legends of Luke Skywalker, but I'm not going to factor that too much in. Let's just try to stick with the movies to the question here. And then I think it's in line with, like I kind of said before, his own experiences and awarenesses of his own faults and the dangers of them. And that to me, him looking over Ben, that same kind of shot that he's looking over Vader and the fist, it lines up in a negative sense, right? And I think that's part of the connection of just like, he knows what's in him or what could be in him, and that's why it would scare him now. And so that tracks for me just as well as, he would make the same decision to throw down his saber as he did there. You know what I mean? So it's this full, it's Luke older. It's Luke with experiences, Luke with failures that comes out of a lot of his failures during the original trilogy.
Yeah, well, I think that's great. That's extremely well said. And I love your point about the even little bit of visual connection between him looking at his blade in his hand versus looking at his mechanical hand in Return of the Jedi. That's great. Yeah, I think for me, I've really enjoyed rewatching the original trilogy and kind of taking a step back from all of my own personal relationship with Luke Skywalker, and kind of ironically how he lives as a myth in the real world, as just purely a symbol of one of the greatest heroes ever, a symbol of hope. Mark Hamill in the real world has been such an ambassador of Luke Skywalker as a symbol of hope, as a hero. Which is absolutely a credit to Mark Hamill as a human being and to Luke Skywalker as a character. But it's been really fun for me to step back and go, like, what are all of the elements of Luke's character in the original trilogy? And to me, what I see is this in Last Jedi is this older man who has been through a trauma and has all these elements of Luke's character from the original trilogy. Yeah, he still has hope and empathy and kindness, but he also has, if you watch Empire, he's got a temper. He's easily frustrated. Even the famous in A New Hope going out to look at the twin sons, he's got that real funny just kicking a rock out of the way because he's just like,
yes,
stupid rock. I hate my life here is boring. And like, he has all of that impatience and lack of belief in Empire Strikes Back. I don't think that's something that he just gets past. I think that's a part of him. I think that's the part of him that is susceptible to the dark side of that impatience and frustration with, you know, I know the right thing to do, but there's all these things in the way. And I just throw down my bowl of root leaf stew. And can't we go to see him now? Like, we're wasting our time. You know, that's a part of who Luke is as well. He overcomes it in Return of the Jedi, but it is a part of him. I think you also see like his sense of humor. There's a lot of little, like, you know, Luke seeing the humor in things. And I think that is a part of his characterization in Last Jedi. So real specific bullet points. I feel like what we see in Last Jedi, how all of that comes out is when Rey arrives and Rey really has this view of, well, the Jedi need to come back because they need to use their lightsabers to beat the dark side in the First Order. And they're very powerful and they need to come back. I think he sees that same naive vision that he had in A New Hope and in the beginning of Empire, where he sees the Jedi are warriors who are going to get their swords and they're going to use their powers and they're going to help the good guys win. And I think he sees himself in Rey, and that's why he's so like, I got to push her through quickly to learn the lesson I did, that there's more to it than that. And then in Empire Strikes Back, once he goes through all of his ordeal and his failures and his lessons from Yoda, where Yoda really drills into him, you know, being a Jedi is not a great warrior. Wars not make one great. Being a Jedi is not about craving adventure and excitement. It takes the most serious mind. You have to be committed to this very important and serious task. And that's one of the elements I love the most of, like, I feel like Luke obsesses on that. Like, that was his mistake. And that's why he is so obsessed with what you need is knowledge and mastery and respect of the Jedi ways. And that's what sort of blinds him to learning from his mistakes. And that's what Yoda has to remind him of, like, remember, you made mistakes too. And it's not just about being serious minded and having this great mastery. And then all of that to me comes together with what you're talking about is in this great tragic moment where he knows there's great darkness rising in Ben. He has that moment of instinct that he should take action. It's just a moment. He's trapped in such a hard position. That's his role as a Jedi, to stop the darkness. But he sees like just that one second of like, well, of course I can't do that. This is the exact opposite of how I defeated my own inclination to the dark side, and how I got through to my father was by throwing my weapon down, not igniting it. And that's why he's so horrified at himself, because I made a mistake that I didn't think I'd ever make again. And then finally comes through Rey, through Yoda, accepting that it is still his responsibility to act, but he can do what he did in the past. He can value pacifism. He can value creativity, and he can find a way to act that still respects his beliefs. And the final thing that I'll say is, I think it can be overlooked in The Last Jedi how much the word hope is talked about, and how much the word hope is a motivation that Leia, Rey might not totally understand, but Leia does. Leia doesn't want Luke back just for his powers. Leia wants him back because he is a symbol of hope. And that's even how Rey starts to crack the doors open on Luke even talking to her, of saying, my sister sent me here with hope. If you're not going to respond, she at least deserves to know why. So that idea of hope starts to get into Luke. And I think, you know, even back to that, hearing Leia, his sister, in the hologram say, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. Well, I mean, the movie's called A New Hope for a reason. Luke becomes the hope. And I think it is really powerful that Luke reconnects to that idea of saying, when I was young, I had hope. I know that the galaxy needs that. I need to be that hope that I was when I was young. I need to be that again so I can inspire other people to have hope, so I can inspire Rey. So I think that it is all of these parts of Luke coming together, that young, hopeful idealist who says, I care, is, you know, he's back when he shows up on Crait to face Ben. And all of the impatience and the doubt and the history of his choices between raising his blade and throwing it aside are all at work. All that stuff is all, everything in Last Jedi is, you can trace directly back to the original trilogy, in my opinion.
100%. And what, as I'm listening to you speak this, and I know Luke is so important to you, and you've talked about some of this stuff before and how Luke, you connect to Luke in a very real world manner. And you, hearing you talk about Leia and understanding what it meant, or what it, you know, what it meant to her to have Luke back, you know, it, again, wasn't just a weapon. It wasn't his, you know, just his tactics and strategy. It was the hope, the symbol, and what he really was. Just in a real world sense, it's, again, this is something I know you've touched upon. Go back to 83. Go back and look around the pop culture landscape at our heroes at the time. They are punching Russians in the face. They are, you know, got a giant machine gun and a bandana around. I'm not just picking on Sylvester Stallone people, all right? G.I. Joe, something I love. They're all, they're these big things. And in the middle of that, George Lucas puts out this non-warrior. And that's our hero. And here's how you do it. And I do still think, and this is why your question's so great, Jeremy, I still think that was missed and is still missed. And you look at Last Jedi, and maybe you in that theater were expecting Luke Rambo to come back. But Luke Rambo didn't exist. That never was. That was never the point. And that's how it connects, too, in this big, big sense of that's what George wanted out there. That's what the story of Luke is largely about. You talked about where he starts in A New Hope and where he ends up in Return of the Jedi. It's all there. And that all pours into the complicated, grumpy man that Luke has become on that island. And I love it.
Yeah. Complicated, grumpy, funny man who reattaches to his love of hope and pacifism actually making a difference, which is, it's just beautiful.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really fun. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for those questions. So thank you, Jeremy, Will, Amidala's Chef, and Ryan Dino 101. All great names, both human and Twitter handle. So that's it for our questions this week, Ken.
That's right. We're wrapping up. And if you want to send us a question, there's some ways to do it. You can go to Twitter. You can go to Twitter, you winner. Go to Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center. Like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. New show and tell went up this past weekend with Alex Molly Damon of Star Wars Explained. Check that out. Final In Memoriam of this season is going to be coming up soon. And we can, it's, I was going to tease it. No, it's an Imperial. It's cool. That's some tease. Podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Imperial, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. We have merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us at Patreon, patreon.com/ForceCenter, and submit a question for this very show. We got cool things going on there. Just sent out two more collector card sets to the folks who are at the top tier. Those are on the way to you there. And that is it. Oh, that's it for my list, Joseph, other than our personal plugs and donations. So where can they find you, sir?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all sorts of comedy albums, an old comedy book about pop culture, fun stuff, some Star Wars essays in there as well. I always forget to mention in my book, Comedy of Doom, and my other podcast, Obsessed. And then for what I'm promoting this week, I am back to promoting the Vote Forward Project. That's the website is votefwd.org. And you just help write letters to voters to encourage them to use their power, to let people know how you feel, to maybe show up on Exegol as a and not just be a Navy, but be the people with power. So voteforward.org. How about you, Ken? Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Catnapsuck. I finally launched my baseball podcast feed, Box Score Heroes. You can check that out. And you can go to catnapsuck.com for information on all the things I do. And we're highlighting on the charity spotlight tab this month, the Peace Fund. Go to thepeacefund.org for more information. They have a threefold mission to protect, educate, and aid children that are in extraordinary difficult circumstances. This was nominated, recommended by Knapsack Files and Force Center listener Kai Thatch, a great guy, an actor down here in SoCal himself. And thank you, Kai, for recommending that. We're highlighting that month. This month, I can talk here on KenNapsack.com. So that is it for this week. We thank you all for listening to the news, and we thank you for your questions. And more importantly, well, let's get Wrecker into that diner. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.